From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to a Thursday's Richie Allen Show. Oh, it's been a miserable old day, so it has, in Greater Manchester. It's the 26th of September 2019. I'll be taking your phone calls today, this evening even, in around about 30 minutes' time. So I look forward to hearing from you. Please do get in touch. All the details are on the Twitter page as to how to contact me. But I will tell you in a minute. I will tell you anyway. Orally. And I look forward, as I said, to hearing from you. You can Skype the program, or if you don't have Skype, you can phone it. That's not too bad, is it? Let's get on with the old show.
And the truth shall set you free.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Lovely to be with you. It really is. Thanks for tuning in. Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, and of course my own website, richieallen.co.uk. Your phone calls from about 5:30. I've got a frog in the old throat, so you're going to do most of the work today. Your phone calls from about 5:30. You can Skype the program. The Skype name is Chat with Richie, all one word, Chat with Richie, and there is no T in Richie. Chat with Richie, or you can phone the program from inside the UK. It's 0161, that's Manchester, 0161 818 2018. 0161 818 2018. And if you are calling from outside of the UK, it is +44 161 818 2018. I will repeat that again if you need me to, and I'll put it out on tweet again if you need me to. It's, I think, pinned to the top of the Richie Allen Show Facebook page if you need to find it. All right. I might have been a bit tough on E. William Smith this morning, who's a listener to the programme. And he tweeted something, and to be fair to him, he's entitled to his opinion. And he tweeted something about the brilliance of Donald Trump's address to the United Nations the other day. And I kind of went in on him a bit. Now, I don't know the guy. It isn't personal. It's just a name, isn't it, on social media. Keep that in mind, because I'm going to talk about that in a minute, social media. It's a name and it's an avatar. And I'm a bit tired of people. In general. Not individual people. I'm going through the mill at the moment, mentally. I don't have any mental health issues. But at the moment, I'm somebody who spent most of my life interested in other people. And while I've got my faults and complications as much as any other man or woman, one of the virtues I've always had, I've always been there for people, whether I know them or not. If I can give somebody a hand, whether it be a shoulder, you know, somebody to lean on, whether it be a couple of quid, if I have a couple of quid. I've always been that guy. But lately, I've kind of turned against people. I might have mentioned this on one of the shows recently. I'm having that. What was that guy? I can never think of his name, who sold all the jewellery. And then he admitted it was a pile of shite. Gerald Ratner, was it? Was it Ratner? I might be having a Ratner moment. I might be just divesting myself of my audience. I don't mean you. I do care about you. I do. But people, I'm gone off people. You know? And I suppose when I saw William's message this morning about Trump and how great he is, I just lost my temper. A bit. Because I despair that here we are in 2019 and people, God love them, still think that their futures are in their own hands so long as they get to go and vote every couple of weeks. Excuse me, every couple of years, you know. Local elections, couple of years, then general elections. And so my tirade at William was really a tirade at everybody who falls for it, year in, year out. So I'm going through that at the moment. I'm a bit fed up. I'm not depressed. I'm a bit fed up with people. And maybe people are a bit fed up with me. Maybe it works both ways. I don't know. But anyway, so I might have been a bit harsh maybe on William this morning. Look, let's talk about this and then we'll chat, you and I. Don't try and Skype me or ring me at the moment because it isn't switched on. I switch it on when I'm ready to take the calls. Otherwise, there'd be calls ringing and ringing and ringing. I think you'll understand that. So the Skype then is Chat with Richie. Chat with Richie. All one word. The phone number is 0161 818 2018. That's 0161 818 2018. Plus 44 161 818 2018 if you're calling from outside the UK. But don't do that. Skype, you can download it for free and you shouldn't have to pay to call me. All right. All righty. Now, members of Parliament this afternoon, early this afternoon, were kind of collectively urging or asking Prime Minister Boris Johnson to apologise after he'd said that the best way to honour Joe Cox, the MP murdered during the European Union referendum campaign, was to get Brexit done. Now, that's not exactly what Boris Johnson said. I can't believe I find myself defending this man, this creature. But you've got to tell the truth here. The BBC and ITV and Channel 4 are reporting, without any context, without any nuance, they're saying that Johnson said the best way to honour Cox was to get Brexit done. It's not what he meant. He was criticised also for calling the law which blocks no deal the surrender bill. He's been criticised for that. This was because Jess Phillips, the Labour MP for Birmingham Yardley, she was granted the right to ask an urgent question of the Prime Minister. And her question was about the language and the tone of language. We'll hear Jess Phillips in a minute, sadly. But we'll have to listen to it, right? Johnson himself wasn't there today. One of his ministers was, a guy called Foster. He stood in and fielded these questions. So Jess Phillips' urgent question in the Commons today was on Johnson's language. She said the bravest and strongest thing to do would be for Boris Johnson to apologise. Here's what Phillips said. It's about 2 minutes long. Do pay attention to it because there have been some developments since. Jess Phillips, Labour MP today.
When I hear of my friend's murder and the way that it has made me and my colleagues feel and feel scared, described as humbug, yeah. Yeah. I actually don't feel anger towards the Prime Minister. I feel pity for those of you who still have to toe his line. You, the people opposite me, know how appalling it was to describe the murder of my friend as mere humbug.
This is disgusting because he didn't describe the murder of Joe Cox as humbug. He described the carry-on of an MP called Paula Sheriff, who ranted on like a fishwife at Boris Johnson last night, as humbug. He didn't describe the death of Joe Cox as humbug. And I'm pretty sure that Jess Phillips, however thick Jess Phillips might be, I'm pretty sure she knows this. But sadly, the media has picked this up this afternoon and is running with it unchallenged, that he described the death of a woman who's left behind a family as humbug. Now, I can't believe I'm in the situation where I'm defending Boris Johnson, but the truth is the truth. What else did Jess Phillips say?
Can I ask everybody to act with calm and dignity in this moment?
Jess Phillips is asking for calm and dignity this afternoon. A woman who has previously said that if Jeremy Corbyn didn't do what she wanted, she would knife him in the front. She wouldn't knife him in the back. A woman who takes great pleasure in telling people to fuck off on Twitter. Now hang on. Don't get me wrong. I'm not being a hypocrite here. It's not the pot calling the kettle black. I have sworn, and I have sworn at people. For sure I have. But you don't hear me telling people to moderate their language now, do you? All right. What else did she say?
I want to ask the Prime Minister to apologise and to tell him that the bravest, strongest thing to say is sorry. It will make him look good. It will not upset the people who want Brexit in this country if he acts for once like a statesman. Calling me names, putting words in my mouth and in the mouth of my dead friend makes me cross and angry.
I'm not aware of any names that Boris Johnson called Jess Phillips. I do stand to be corrected. If somebody can show me a transcript where Johnson has name-called, has used name-calling as a way of addressing Jess Phillips. And I'm not aware of any time that Boris Johnson has sought to put words in the mouth of the former Batley and Spen MP Joe Cox, who was murdered just before the referendum in 2016. It's not hyperbole, this is pathological lying by Jess Phillips.
It makes me scared even.
And it makes her scared.
But I will not react. The Prime Minister wants me to react so that I join in the chaos that keeps this hatred and fear on our streets. I simply ask the Minister today to request to the Prime Minister...
Wait for this. Her request for the Prime Minister is...
...who's notable by his bravery today. I ask him... I ask him to ask the Prime Minister...
Wait for it.
To meet with me in private.
To meet with Jess Phillips in private. I'd rather meet with Freddy Krueger in private, but go on.
With his advisers and some of my colleagues and my friends from Joe's family.
Wow.
So that we can explain our grief and try to make him understand why it is so abhorrent that he has chosen a strategy to divide rather than to lead.
Yeah. Right, so that is basically a pile of grandstanding, virtue-signalling horse manure by Jess Phillips. As aggressive, as wretched, as angry, as vitriolic an MP that has ever bestrode the halls of Westminster. Johnson should come and meet me and the other people who grieve for Joe Cox and her family, and we'll put him straight. Johnson hasn't said anything that could be described as derogatory or upsetting or offensive about Joe Cox, the 3-year deceased murdered MP, or her family. He said humbug when a woman was screaming abuse at him. Invective across the dispatch box, across the floor last night. He never described the death of Cox as humbug. What they have banged on about more than anything today is the use of the word surrender. The use of the word surrender by Boris Johnson, which is how he describes the bill which passed the House of Lords, and was given royal assent, the bill that declares that he cannot leave the European Union with no deal, that he must take it off the table. That's the truth. It's not conjecture. This isn't my opinion. Now, later this afternoon, Jess Phillips, whose constituency office is in Birmingham Yardley, was allegedly locked down because a bloke started banging on the windows and screaming the word fascist. If this is true, and I'm not saying it isn't, the constituency employees of Jess Phillips, or the employees of her constituency office, were upset and battened down the old hatches, as the old cliche goes, and they phoned the police, and the guy was allegedly arrested. He started slapping his hands on the windows and screaming fascist, and then he was arrested. So a short time ago, LBC Radio managed to get a hold of Jess Phillips to talk to her about this. So she describes it But it's what she says at the very end that's very interesting.
My staff had to be locked in while he, I think, stood shouting fascist and smacking the doors and windows.
And have you spoken to anyone in your office? Have they been?
I have spoken to them, and the man has been arrested. Well, he's been taken away by the police. But I don't know anymore, and I don't know what I can and can't say because of, obviously, legal processes that will go on. But my staff are okay.
And obviously, as you say, you do have to be careful, but in the context of the last 24 hours, is there anything you'd like to add?
Right. So my staff are okay. Guy's arrested, can't say too much. Legal issues, obviously. He might be charged. So the interviewer says, put what happened today into the context of the last 24 hours.
I'm not going to leap to blame Boris Johnson.
But?
For this attack, but...
But?
We need to all be better. And he's the Prime Minister. And I wish that he would choose, instead of trying to divide, to trying to lead. I think that that's what the country wants to see.
And can I just finally ask you, obviously in the chamber today, some people were suggesting to you that you sometimes get pretty energetic in the chamber.
Do.
That, you know, does everyone have a case to answer to some extent as to atmosphere in Parliament?
Absolutely. The atmosphere in Parliament, everybody has a case to answer. I think the only person who has a case to answer with regard to having a specific strategy to royal hate and aggression in the country is Boris Johnson. I am human. I lose my temper. I behave badly. I am the first person to put my hands up and say, and you know what, I will learn from this week that lesson. And it is a lesson, hard one. And sometimes I will get it wrong because I am a human being.
Yeah, just as a human being, God love her, you know. She threatens to knife people in the front, not in the back, if they don't do what she says. She lies about confronting Diane Abbott and telling her to fuck off, something which never happened, to make herself look big and bad and important. She swears at people all the time on Twitter. Johnson doesn't do that. Now, I think Johnson is the devil incarnate, to be honest with you, right? But he doesn't do that. He doesn't behave like that. He used a phrase, surrender bill. So I'll hold my hands up. I can lose my temper. I can say stuff. But he can't say this and he can't say that. He can't use language like surrender bill. He can't say humbug. That's Jess Phillips. And then she says this. This is important.
I'm a human being, but what Boris Johnson is not doing.
Listen to this.
What he is doing is not human. It is.
It's not human.
It is manipulative. It is purposeful. It is his strategy. He wants people like me to be under threat.
He wants people like me to be under threat. That's libelous. And she didn't say that inside the House of Commons. Phillips is as stupid as she is hysterical. Not saying that in the chamber leaves her wide open to proceedings by Johnson and his family. I would take her to the cleaners. She's basically said there that Johnson is deliberately trying to put people like her in harm's way through the use of language like surrender bill. Right, let's hear a little bit more of this. So after the urgent question was put by Phillips earlier on, we're back to lunchtime now when this urgent question about language was put to this guy Foster in the absence of Boris Johnson. The usual suspects jumped up. Stella Creasy, Walthamstow MP. Stella Creasy, Labour Party. She couldn't wait to get in on the action. Stella Creasy.
The challenge of what the Minister is saying is this isn't actually about Brexit, and nor, for many of us, is this about how do we make this stop. Because actually, if we want to do that, we need to understand where it starts and how the extremists on all sides of our political culture will trump proudly about how they might stand at Cable Street to defend people's rights, or will listen to Steve Bannon and disagree with him, but have absolutely no understanding or comprehension of how we get to that Cable Street, how we get to Steve Bannon in the first place. And the danger with the Prime Minister's conduct last night is it is feeding a culture and a language that normalises extremism.
Right, so Johnson's conduct last night is feeding a culture that normalises extremism. Johnson said, I disagree with the Supreme Court decision. I will take the country out of the European Union one way or the other on October 31st. I challenge the Labour Party to man up or woman up and call a no-confidence vote in me to trigger an election, but they won't, they're a bunch of cowards. In the face of some vitriolic invective by the likes of Paula Sheriff and other fishwives and fish husbands as well, he said, humbug. And when he said the best thing we could do to honour Joe Cox was to get Brexit done, what he actually meant was, I believe, he was saying to the screaming horde of lunatics on the Labour benches, if you want to end all this division, that's what he meant. All of this invective, all of this vitriol, in her memory, the best thing to do is get Brexit done once and for all. That's what he was saying. And they're talking about him fueling extremism, using language. But the language he used was moderate in the extreme, at least by the standards of normal everyday business in the House of Commons anyway. What else does Stella Creasy say? Yeah. This is man-hating Stella Creasy, by the way. And that is not now. That is not conjecture. That is not cheeky, below-the-belt commentary by a radio presenter. Creasy and Phillips before her are men-haters in the extreme. Okay, I could play any number of clips for you. And I could show you any number of quotes attributed to Creasy and to Phillips about their hatred for all things masculine. In fact, Creasy does it for me in a second.
So that those of us who have had traitor shouted at us in the street...
Yeah, but somebody shouting traitor at you in the street is somebody shouting traitor at you in the street. Suck it up, love. It's not a crime. Might be an inconvenience to you, but it can't be illegal. It can't be seen as anything other than an angry member of the public shouting at an MP who's earning, when everything is factored in, £100,000 a year plus. I'm not saying that your ability to endure vitriol from the public should be determined by the amount of your salary. I'm not saying that at all. But a guy shouting across the street, you're a traitor. Suck it up, buttercup. Those are the slings and arrows, right? What else does she say?
As well as online, because the online and the offline are no different.
Yeah, the online. When you see something offensive on Twitter, mute it or ban it. That's all you have to do. I was engaged in a bit of roly-poly, bit of hurly-burly, with an idiot who stalks me on Twitter, right? And in the midst of that, discussion, I was also discussing blocking and banning with a listener called Steve. Steve thought that he was blocked by the Richie Allen Show. He isn't blocked by the Richie Allen Show. And I said to him, Steve, we've only blocked 8 people in 4 or 5 years, but we've muted about 100. The muted people can still see what I'm tweeting, but I don't see what they tweet. So if you see something on Twitter or on Facebook that you find disturbing or offensive, it takes less than... Let's be absolutely honest about it. It takes less than 3 seconds to mute that person. So that idiot can sit there for the next 20 years tweeting about how much of a bastard you are, about how much they hate you, about how you're this and you're that and you're the other thing, but you don't see it. More from Creasy.
Experience this as the heat of the kitchen rather than a language that does nobody any favours in our democracy. And I say to the minister, the most important...
Starts crying now. This is the thing, you see. Take a big deep breath, let your eyes water a bit, and put a bit of pathos, put a bit of emotion into your voice. What is she saying now?
The most important thing he can do now is go and listen to what we're missing, because this doesn't affect everyone equally.
It doesn't affect everyone equally.
We're going to have white men of a certain age with independent means in our politics, because this doesn't affect everyone equally.
Listen to this.
Equally. we're still going to have white men of a certain age with independent means in our politics.
Yeah, and she laments that. Oh, woe for the fact that we have white men, middle-aged, in our political discourse, in our political institutions. Oh, woe is the day. You see what you're dealing with here?
But it is the young people.
The young people now.
The women, the people from minority communities who are already saying they're not going to take part in our politics, not because they've already experienced the rape threats and the means in our politics.
Let's hear this again, this bit.
But it is the young people.
The young people and the minorities.
It's the women, the people from
Young people, women and minorities. Let's just get it straight. Young people, women and minorities.
In our politics. But it is the young people. It is the women, the people from minority communities who are already saying they're not going to take part in our politics, not because they've already experienced the rape threats and the death threats and the bomb threats and the intimidation,
Minister.
But because they see it. Minister. When the trolls are in Parliament, how do we stop feeding the trolls?
Yeah, Berko tried to cut her off, actually, to his credit. And we've been very critical of Berko. That was Stella Creasy. I'm going to be a few minutes late before I open the phones, but don't panic. We'll have plenty of time to get people on the line. Here's Luciana Berger, then. These days, she's a Liberal Democrat. Former Labour Party MP. Labour Friends of Israel. One of Corbyn's chief tormentors around the issue of anti-Semitism. She couldn't wait to stand up. Remember, the context is they're talking about the need to moderate language in public discourse. Here's Berger, Luciana Berger.
Luciana Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, our words carry consequences. They reverberate far and wide beyond these four walls. And the Prime Minister, who holds the highest office in our land, also bears the greatest responsibility for what he says and inspires. I don't believe the Minister can in one breath tell this House that he seeks to reduce online harm, while the Prime Minister booms out toxic, divisive soundbites, the clips of which are immediately posted and promoted on online, hate-filled social media channels.
They're going after the internet. This is partly what this is about. They're going after the internet. But they're also going after people's civil right to be angry with the people they elected to the offices of the state. They want to completely remove your ability. Park that, because I've got some thoughts on that. I'll tell you in a minute. What else does she say? She talks, Berger, about six people having been convicted for hate crimes against her. This is new to me.
Yeah. We've seen the incidence of hate crime in our country increase. And as a member of this House who has seen no fewer than six people convicted of the harassment and the hate crimes directed at me, can I ask the Minister to take back to this Prime Minister that he has to urgently reconsider this deliberate strategy of sowing seeds of division in our country?
And that was Berger.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was Berger. Now, I came across a series of tweets this afternoon by a girl called Ellie Cooper. She's the daughter of Labour MP Yvette Cooper and Ed Balls. Ed Balls is a former MP, former Secretary of State, I believe. These days, Balls is a dancer and a talking head, I believe. I'm not saying that to be rude. Yvette Cooper and Balls are Blairites to the bone. And their daughter is Ellie Cooper. I don't know how old this kid is. And I don't mean to criticise the kid. So I'm just going to read out what she's been tweeting. This is the daughter of Yvette Cooper and Ed Balls. She's tweeting and I'm reading the tweets verbatim. I am scared. I am scared when I scroll through the replies to my mother's tweets calling her a liar and a traitor. I am scared when her house gets fitted with panic buttons, industrial locking doors and explosive bags to catch the mail. Because she is trying her best to help people, to make their lives better. Even if we disagree with our politicians, when was this something we actively wanted to hurt them for? The whole thing has gone too far. When people start getting hurt, is the moment that we should step back and ask if any of this is even worth it. All the anger and the screaming and the taking sides. The traitors and the liars and the surrendering. The thing is, someone has already died. Do we not have the decency and compassion to see that? Can we not all just treat each other like people again? Because I'm terrified if we don't, that something awful is going to happen again. At this rate, that seems like the only thing that could stop us in our tracks. We need to change the way we act towards our MPs before it goes too far, because if not, I have no doubt it will. Is the daughter of Ed Bowes and Yvette Cooper. My mother is trying her best to help people. That's patently untrue. That's provably untrue. And it isn't just Yvette Cooper. Elected MPs, whether they come from Yorkshire, Humberside, Redcar, London, the East End, Dover, are not in the business of doing their best to help people or make their lives better. That's obvious to even the most committed Democrat, to even the most committed Anglophile who votes in every bloody election, local, town council, mayoral, even to the most ardent participant in democracy. They know in their bones that the MPs are not there doing their best for people and to make people's lives better. It's patently obvious. People are getting hurt, allegedly. Well, Joe Cox was murdered 3 years ago. And as far as I'm concerned, that murder hasn't been solved. Thomas Mayer is rotting away in prison for it. And I don't believe that there was conclusive evidence that he was even behind it. But I can't prove that. Outside of that, people are not getting hurt. MPs have not been attacked. I know there was allegedly a plot against an MP that was filed earlier this year, allegedly. But I don't know if that's true or not either. But MPs are not being attacked. And they're certainly not being attacked because Boris Johnson said that the bill which took no deal off the table is tantamount to a surrender bill. He can't say that, Boris Johnson. He can't say that. Disenfranchised people right across the country, working class people, have been raped by the political class year in and year out. And those people, my neighbours, by the way, your neighbours, they cannot use the word traitor and they cannot say the word fascist. Why not? What else can they do? What else can they do? They don't get to see their MPs. Don't think or imagine they do for a minute. Oh, well, they've got their surgeries in their constituencies. They are carefully screened to make sure that anybody who might cause even a modicum of trouble is banned or precluded from those surgery meetings. People have been ignored for years by the political class. And then what happened? Well, social media came along. And all of a sudden, they have a chance to vent. Wow. I see my Member of Parliament has got a Twitter account. And if I tweet and I put their Twitter name in the tweet, I can challenge them directly on Twitter and on Facebook. Chance to vent. Because for years, their phone calls, their letters and their emails weren't returned by their MPs. Not unless the inquiry is something very benign. And I know this to be true. Send them an email asking them about, I don't know, something to do with the price of wheat or the price of oil. Send them an email asking them, would they look into putting some more ducks in the pond for the OAPs, and somebody from their office will get back to you. Ask them about something serious and you are ignored. Demand answers about Brexit and you are ignored. I know this for a fact. So people had social media. All right, I can join in. I want to say this, and I don't believe I've got a patronising bone in my body. Maybe we sound patronising sometimes, people who make programmes. I come from Ballybeg in Waterford City, which is a working class housing estate. Priory Lawn I was brought up in. And I remember it fondly. And I want to talk about conflict resolution in working class folks. Because I remember one of the first things the future Mrs. Allen said to me. And before we met, she'd had a boyfriend for a couple of years. He came from a working class family as well. He came from Tipperary, I think. And she was fascinated, was this mild-mannered French woman who came from a home, came from a place that was entirely different to Ballybeg in Waterford, or Rathkeel in Limerick, or Ballymun in Dublin. She came from a place, did the future Mrs. Allen, when people had issues with one another, they talked them out in a moderate and rational way. But I come from a housing estate called Ballybeg, and I grew up where people resolved the conflict they had with one another by screaming their fucking lungs out at one another and calling each other names. Exploding. Right? Exploding like a volcano when they felt threatened or challenged or when they felt injured. Massive explosion, screaming matches. Roddy Doyle nailed it, by the way, in his Barrytown trilogy. It is hilariously funny, but he nailed conflict resolution in working class families. Not sophisticated. Not even remotely sophisticated. And when I said this before about sophistication, I was called a snob and I was called an elitist. Jesus Christ, if you only knew where I come from. It's only recently that I've begun to address my own I don't know, approach to dealing with conflict resolution. I've been a screamer and an overreactor. It's where I come from. It's as Irish as fucking Clover Meats. It's as Irish as Glan Bia. It's as Irish as Henry Shefflin. Massive explosion, people having a go at one another when they don't know how else to deal with it. Lack of sophistication, it's not a lack of intelligence. It's how we respond. And when an MP is walking down the street and some bloke who's fucked, who can't pay his council tax anymore because it goes up by 4% every year, his job's not paying enough, he can only barely make the rent every month. This is true for millions and millions of people in this country. It's not an exaggeration. Every fibre of his fucking being is stressed to be Jesus. And he's like me, that guy. He comes from a working class council estate. And he looks across the road and he sees Stella fucking Creasy or Jess fucking Phillips. What does he do? Excuse me, Ms. Creasy, if you don't mind stopping for a couple of minutes, I'd like to get a thing or two off my chest. Of course he doesn't. He says, hey, Creasy, you fucking traitor, you bitch, you're this, you're that, you bitch, you fucker. And then he keeps walking. That's what he does. I've done it myself. Right? I had to learn as I grew up that I was working with people and sharing space with people who didn't come from the background I came from. And I'm not fucking 50 Cent here. I'm not saying I came from the hood, right? But I grew up in a working class estate where a lot of people weren't working. The best people in the world. And hearing people shouting through the walls that were so thin, by the way, in the words of the immortal Brendan Grace, God love him, that when you open up your oven, the fucker next door was dipping his bread in your gravy, right? You could hear people shouting at one another. That's what people do. Food bank usage rises, council tax rises, Brexit betrayal. What does Jess Phillips want? People to say, oh, I'm sorry, Jess, but if you don't mind awfully, fuck off, you know? Bills up to your tits. We're in that situation, and I don't want any sympathy. If anything happens to us, we're about 6 weeks away from the fucking street. Whose fault is that, Richie? Well, I've worked every hour that God sent my entire life. So has the future Mrs. Allen. It's the banking and political elite's fault that we are struggling from week to week and we don't know where the next fucking holiday is coming from, most of us who haven't been on holiday for years. Escape. No, you're just stuck with it. Right? No jobs. I speak to people around here all the time. Zero-hour contracts jobs. Fucking worthless. the political class. I explained it on the paper review show this morning. They are fucking people. And people are hurt. They are bewildered. They are angry. And they are lost. And now they are being gaslit by people like Stella Creasy and Jess Phillips. They are being told that they are toxic for no other reason than they are men. Number one. Which is complete fucking balderdash, bollocks, crap, whatever you want to say. They are being told that they are full of hate. That they are misogynistic. They are racist. They are worthless. You're worthless. That's what your members of parliament tell you every day of the week. While they collect £100,000. Pass fucking go. Commit crimes on a daily basis. And don't ever go to jail. Ellie Cooper, God love that kid. Wouldn't say a word against her. She's a kid. My mother gets up every day and goes to work for the people. She doesn't, my fucking arse, go to work for the people. No more than Tony Blair went to work for the people. And where we are now, dear listener, these criminals are saying to you, we will set the parameters of any criticism of the process. Can you effing believe it? We will set the parameters of any criticism of us. We'll frame the debate. You can criticise us, but only this way. Very Israeli that, isn't it? Very Zionist that. Yes, if you want to criticise us, you will do it within this set of guidelines. Imagine. And where this is all going is full internet lockdown. Total control of not only what can be said, whether it's online or in the street, but also when you can say it. And the consequences are going to be swift and brutal for people who step outside those guidelines. I have no time for Boris Johnson. Do I have to keep saying that? Do I? None. But Boris Johnson hasn't used language that could be construed as inflammatory. Language that could be claimed to be inciting people to shout fascist and traitor at Jess Phillips. Jess Phillips is the definition of a fascist. As is Stella Creasy, the definition of it. 17.4 million people said, yes, this EU thing is very fucking scary. Alignment is speeding up at the rate of knots. Control by Brussels over policies, foreign policies, budgets, budgetary policies. It's all happening. We've had enough of it. And we've had enough that it's hard enough to get on in our little community without letting people in from other parts of Europe, from new member states. It's fucking killing us. And it's killing the NHS. So we'll vote leave. And what does Jess Phillips do? And I'm not picking on Jess Phillips. She's the one with the big fucking mouth today, like the Watford Gap. Right? It's not just her. They've gotten together because of their... I'm not going to say it. Because I'll be here all day long. They've gotten together. Not of their own volition. Not because they've decided themselves that Brexit is wrong. But their puppet masters and puppet mistresses. Their paymasters. The ones who paved their way into politics. And their cushy £100,000 plus a year jobs. With the promise of, do what we want you to do. Say what we want you to say and vote the way we want you to vote. And you can have a long career as a career politician or a shorter career. And later on, work in the private sector in a non-executive role and we'll look after your children as well. And they're screaming and crying because people on the margins in this country are calling them traitors and labelling them as fascistic. It's time they got a fucking wake-up call. I'm going to open the phones in a minute. It's coming up for 11 minutes to the top of the air. I'm sorry I was a bit late, but there you are. Some things kind of need to be said, you know. This is Jimi Hendrix singing Bob Dylan's All Along the Watchtower. Back in a minute. Right, Jimi Hendrix, All Along the Watchtower on the Richie Allen Show. Welcome back to it. Sorry I'm a bit late going to the Skype and the phone. Before I say hi to John, John is standing by on Skype there. Let me give you the contact details for the programme. The Skype name for the programme is Chat with Richie. That's Chat with Richie, C-H-A-T with Richie. And the phone number is 0161 818 2018. That's +44 161 818 2018 if you're calling from outside the country, okay? So it's Chat with Richie on Skype. If you're not answered, don't keep ringing. I will get to you. I'm going to take John. Now, I think I might have John. Do I? Have I got John? I missed a call from John. Have I missed John? I might have missed John. So let's see. Oh, God, look at this. Look. Oh, Jesus Christ. Ah! Let's see. Let's see, can we get John on? John was standing by. I might have lost him. I'm going to try and bring him back. 0161 818 2018 is the number, but you can Skype the programme. It's Chat with Richie. John, thank welcome you to the programme. How are you?
Hi, Richie.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm hearing you twice here.
Right, I don't know why that is. Well, maybe it's because you've got the show turned on in the background. Maybe turn the show down, maybe, and we can have a chat, right, my friend.
Is that any better?
Well, I can hear you loud and clear, John. Welcome, by the way. How are you?
Hang on. Blimey.
I'll tell you what, John. We'll come back to John in a minute. We'll come back to John in a minute. We'll let him sort his sound issues out there and I'll call him back. We're going to the phone line now. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who have I got?
Hello, Rashid, Andy from Bristol.
How you doing, Andy? Turn off the old radio in the background there, my friend, so we can hear each other. It's going to be one of these days, isn't it? Yeah, just turn me off there, Andy. So that I know some people are actually calling on the device that they're listening to the radio show on, which is the thing. Andy, how you doing?
I was actually listening to you online, as I always do.
Yeah, see, I thought that. I said to myself, he's listening to me on the device that he's phoning from. There you go. Listen, mate, welcome to the programme, Andy in Bristol. The floor is yours. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Richie. It's a pleasure to talk to you at long last.
My pleasure.
I've been a listener for quite some time. You know my second name is Newman, so...
Andy, of course, I see you on Twitter, Andy.
That's good. Yeah, absolutely, right.
It's good to hear from you. So, mate, you set the agenda then. What would you like to talk about?
Well, really, it's a wide range of things, but carrying on from what you were talking about earlier on, I mean, politics at the moment is just basically theatre. We're told that certain things are going to happen, but odds are that they're not going to happen. Things are... they put a show on for the people, let's put it that way. And your thing for a long time has been, we're never going to leave the EU. Now, I'm getting more and more convinced that you're right. And the other thing that convinces me is when the government starts putting adverts on the TV and on the radio saying, get ready for Brexit on October the 31st.
Yeah.
They put them on before and we didn't leave then. So
yeah.
it may be just a cynical thing from the government departments to say, you know, we're actually going to leave, honestly, and obviously we're not.
Well, we might not be. Andy, how did you vote in the referendum? And what about the people around you? How did you vote and your peer group? How did you vote?
I voted leave. And most of the people I know, in fact, all my close friends at the time, voted leave. Bristol as a whole didn't vote leave, as far as I'm aware, but, you know, it's what happens nationally, not locally.
And how does it make you feel then? And this is not, you know, one of these, I'm not a psychologist, I don't mean to sound like one, but knowing that it's very unlikely, if, you know, totally unlikely to happen, how does that leave you feel? I mean, we have MPs today in the House of Commons you're having a go at people for using words like traitor and fascist. I mean, they're not the nicest words to be using, maybe, but if people feel that strongly about it, do you feel that strongly about it? I mean, again, not trying to put words in your mouth, but when you look at the MPs who have, you know, decided to scupper it, how do you feel about it?
I feel very angry about it inside. I'd like to shout and bawl at people, but it's not getting anywhere. It won't get anyone anywhere. I'm reminded of the great George Carlin. The
great comic. Oh, don't tell me he's lost. Oh, he's back.
He's no longer with us. But he talked about politicians in America, and I mean, it applies over here. He said, they don't give a fuck about you.
No.
And you're absolutely right when you say they're going to work to help the people. They're going to work to help themselves.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons they're afraid of leaving the EU is that they might have to actually do some work instead of relying on Brussels to make most of the laws.
So your gut feeling is we're not going to come out. Here's a question for you. In the event that it becomes obvious that we're not going to leave, do you think there'll be any sort of social reaction to that? I've been speculating about this with a friend of mine as to what might happen. Civil unrest that might become a bit serious. I don't want that to happen. I'd like to see civil disobedience on a massive scale. But civil unrest and violence, I'm not in favour of that at all. Do you see that as a possibility, Andy?
I do see that as a possibility. Like you, I'd rather not see too much in the way of actual violence. But let's face it, I mean, even if the violence happened, it probably wouldn't get on the BBC. Yeah. I mean, let's face it, look at what's been happening in France for the last 6 months and longer.
The Gilets Jaunes demonstrations
every weekend. You know, they don't get reported by the mainstream media at all. You know, despite all the police violence against the people.
As soon as
unrest appears in Hong Kong, they're right on it.
They're right on it. But the French stuff, I suppose, it's easy to turn a blind eye to it, or easier, and maybe the motivation behind that is, let's not give anybody any ideas here in the UK, I suppose.
Well, that's one aspect. The other aspect, I think, is they don't want the people over here to see the bad side of the EU,
yeah,
which is basically Macron setting his police on the people. You know, they don't want that reported. That's my view anyway.
They'd rather people not see that. Andy, I'm getting lots of calls coming in. It's my own bloody fault for not starting on time. So I'm going to try and take a few calls. I'm really glad you phoned up. I see your tweets all the time, of course, during the live show, and I really do appreciate that. And thanks, mate. If you had anything else you wanted to say, Andy, you can say it before I take another call, mate. I don't want to just cut you off there, but there are lots of calls coming in.
So fair enough, I won't hog the phone. Other people are waiting to chat to you. But thanks very much for taking the call, and thanks very much for all you do. It's great listening to many of your guests. You know, it's not everything that sort of floats my boat, but much of it is very, very relevant. And, you know, with yourself and people like David Icke, who put these ideas into the mainstream, it's good work that you're doing.
Thanks, Andy. It's nice to be able to give a platform to people who've got interesting things to say, mate. Like yourself today. Thanks for that, Andy. Have a good weekend, mate. Andy Newman there in Bristol. Lovely to hear from Andy. Thanks for your patience, those of you trying to call me, by the way. It's a Chat with Richie on Skype. Chat with Richie on Skype. And it's 01618182018. And I think we do have John now. John, are you there?
Can you hear me, Richie?
I can hear you loud and clear. I don't know why you can't hear me.
I can hear you, yeah.
Ah, thank God. This is John.
I still had your radio show on.
Yeah, of course
you
did.
It's been a while since I used Skype, so.
Save you a few quid. John, we spoke a few weeks ago, of course. I remember well.
Yeah.
Welcome back. This is Scottish John, by the way. Good to have you on. I'm not going to rush you now. I'll give everybody a few minutes, but I've got loads of calls. So it's over to you, John. Go ahead, my friend.
I was listening to you doing the papers this morning, as I always do, and I got onto your Twitter page, and I was going to try and send you a photograph of me and Jim Mars. I know you're a big Jim Mars fan.
Yeah, I love Jim.
And damn it, I couldn't find the photographs. They'd gone missing from my Facebook page, and I thought, what the hell? So they were taken in a bookstore that Jim Mars used to visit at least once a year. And the last time he was here, I think it was 2016, Richie, he just released his revised edition of the book Crossfire.
That's right.
About the JFK assassination. And it was close to Halloween time, and they were going to combine it with a Halloween party and Jim giving a talk and what have you. So I'm not a big Halloween fan. They go mental for it here in America, man. They spend $6 billion for Halloween here every year. Cracks me up.
The pagan festival. Yeah. A lot of Christians don't like it. Go ahead, John.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, I'll make an effort. And my first thought was, I'll go to a fabric shop and just buy a big bit of green fabric and wear it like a poncho and pretend I'm the grassy knoll in Dallas, you know. And then I noticed just outside my door, I was living in a wee apartment block at the time, and there was some fence pickets out there, and I thought, oh, here's what I'll do. I'll chop these down, and I stapled them to a couple of canvas belts, and they tied round my waist, and they went from like my belly button up to my nose. And then I bought myself a mask and I wore a cowboy hat because I didn't want to be recognized when I walked in the store. So I carried all the stuff with me down to the store, and I'm stood in the back alley outside getting this costume on. And I hear this voice say, "Excuse me, sir." And I turn around and there's a cop. And he asked me what I'm doing. And I said, "Well, what the hell does it look like?" I'm saying, "I'm going to a fancy dress party in Brave New Books here. And I'm getting my costume on before I go in because I don't want anyone to recognize me." Yeah. He says, "Now, the Brave New Bookstore was in the basement, and up above it, there was a branch of, I think it was a Chase Bank." And this cop says, "Yeah, there was a branch of Chase Bank got robbed somewhere else in Austin the previous night." And I'm thinking, so what, you think I'm getting bloody dressed up like this to rob a bank?
Dressed up as the grassy knoll. I mean, for originality, That's a 10 out of 10 there. What have you come as? The grassy knoll.
No, actually, no, the shooter behind the picket fence.
Oh, the shooter behind the fence. Well, yeah, it's the grassy knoll, right? Yeah, it's the shooter.
So I got voted the winner of the fancy dress costume, and we got some photographs taken with Jim. And I says to him, "Look, well, I've got the chance here, Jim. I've got to tell you this wee story from years ago. I used to listen to LBC, Clive Bull, on the late nights when I lived in London, and he used to have this phone-in trivia quiz hour about 2 a.m. in the morning. And this, we had this woman on one night, and she's got a few questions, right? And the next question is, Clive asked her, who was shot in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963? And she says, J.R. Ewing.
Did she really?
She did.
J.R. Ewing, marvellous.
Yeah, so I had to tell Jim that. Anyway, I've got a couple of other things here, Richie, and I'll get through them as quick as I can.
As quick as you can, because I've loads of calls coming. I don't want to be rushing anybody, but I'm going to give you 2 minutes, John, and then I'm going to move on because I'm getting lots of calls coming in, mobile calls in the UK and outside the UK. So go ahead, my friend, quick as you can.
All right, let me just think. I'll tell you what, you know, I've listened to you and Tony Gosling for Yonks talking about the Salisbury shooting or poisoning of the Scripples.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, have you ever managed to get your hands on a book called Spycatcher by Peter Wright?
No, I'm aware of the book, but I've never read it. Yeah.
I have it, mate. Now, when I listened to Theresa May stand up in Parliament and talk about that, my first reaction within seconds, man, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
There's no way the Russians would be that bloody stupid.
Not that stupid, no.
They were smart enough to get their guy to the number one spot in MI5. Back in the bloody 60s or 70s, whenever it was. But listen, seeing as how you're pushed for time, Richie, I'll leave it at that, because the other things I want to talk about, they take a bit of time, so we wouldn't have time. So we'll call that. Oh, here, let me just... Nah, we'll leave it at that, mate, all right?
If you don't mind today, John, we'll do this again in the future, no doubt. I've just got so many calls coming in. I'm going to be hammered if I don't take some calls. So,
all right,
thanks for calling, mate. Good to hear from you. That's John in Texas, in Austin, in Texas. Let me go back to the mobile phones. Call from inside the UK. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, Richie. This is Melanie.
I didn't catch that.
It's Melanie from Newcastle.
Oh, excuse me, Melanie. Melanie, how are you doing, Melanie? Welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Well, things could be better, but, you know, it's probably the same for lots of people.
It sure is. Lovely to hear from you, Melanie. Thanks very much for calling in. And like I say to everybody, the floor is yours. What would you like to say?
Well, problem is there's so many different things we could talk about. Lately, I've become very interested in joining the dots regarding the transgender agenda, because there's lots of spin-offs, I think, that are all linked together, including the education of children now, the introduction in the future of AI. Some of the YouTube videos I've been saying where they're extending, or there are discussions being encouraged about extending rights to robots, whether they'll have human rights or not. And
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of these things are linked, and I don't feel like I've got anyone to talk to about it. Most people just don't seem to be getting it.
No, they don't. It's the sort of thing, if it comes up in conversation or if you bring it up, people, they just don't kind of want to hear about it. And maybe it's because people are being put under pressure all the time to kind of affirm their, I don't want to say loyalty, but to kind of demonstrate that they're fine with it, you know, no matter what it is. I'm very interested in this as well, this teaching of children about gender identity when they're very young. I mean, you might be aware, Melanie, that we talked earlier on in the week, and I think we might have talked last week, they're going to be talking to children aged 5 and 6 about self-touching, which is absolutely bizarre. I mean, I don't have any children. Do you have any children, Melanie?
I have 2 children, thankfully, in their 20s now. I've forbidden them to have any grandchildren while I'm alive, which is actually really sad. I don't want to say that, but I'm horrified about the way things are going and concerned about people who have children in state schools. I'm just wondering, actually, if the private school sector, if they are running the same programs.
That's a brilliant question, that. That's a brilliant question, because I don't know the answer to that. Melanie is on the line from Newcastle. Melanie has 2 children in their 20s. Before we talk about private schools, if this is obviously a stupid question, but I'll ask it anyway. When your children were 5 and 6, if they came home and you're having a bit of tea and you're having a bit of you're having a bit of a conversation, and they tell you that a teacher begun to talk to them about, let's call it what it is, about masturbation, you'd have gone, what would you have done? I mean, I can only imagine what you would have done.
It is beyond inappropriate. I started off with the transgender thing. I feel as though this is a very, very dark, very, very sinister agenda that people really haven't got into their heads as being such, you know. I think it's just bypassing a lot of people who perhaps think it's harmless, or, oh, well, you know, perhaps, you know, they're just not questioning. I think what I'm most disturbed about the education thing is the teachers. I thought these people were educated. If you were educated, I would be questioning what they're doing, you know.
Melanie, you know, maybe some have. This is one of those subjects that has me thinking, like yourself, it has me thinking regularly. Like, I think as well, there are a lot of teachers. I don't know how many teachers are working in the country, but it's tens of thousands, obviously, maybe more. And I have to think that many of them are uncomfortable with being asked to talk about sexual identity, gender identity, sexuality, masturbation with very young children. But this is a terrible economy, isn't it, Melanie? I mean, I mentioned earlier on, most of us genuinely are living from month to month. And if you're a teacher, you might think twice about raising a concern. What do you think?
Sorry, say that last bit.
No, I'm asking, what do you think? I mean, you might be very reluctant, if you were a teacher, to raise your hand and complain or ask any questions, because you might find yourself out of a job.
No, I do get that. The problem is that we're all being held over the same sort of barrels in terms of saying anything, being outspoken, being remotely going against what's being foisted on everyone. But at what point are people going to realise you know, the consequences of this is very dehumanizing. You know, this is, you know, all of the, like I said, pushing children regarding their gender as something to be given a choice over at what seems to be an earlier and earlier age.
Do you know what, Melanie? Do you know what? I would imagine that it's incredibly embarrassing and also incredibly, maybe it's traumatizing for a child to be talked to by a teacher about sexual things like self-touching. That must be a traumatic thing for a child to go through. I remember when I was 13, I went to secondary school. 13 I was, maybe I was 12, So I went to secondary school, high school, and that was when we did sexual education in biology class. So it was all very sanitary. You know, it was, here are the testes, here is the male sexual organ, here is the female sexual organ. But even then, at 13, I was mortified, Melanie, to be honest. I was mortified in the class.
Absolutely.
I was 13, right?
I actually feel that this is state-sponsored child abuse, that children are being, you know, encouraged to be put forward as guinea pigs, because this is experimentation. And the transgender community, you know, there's a lot of, I think it's a very vulnerable group, you know. I'll probably be shot down in flames by the activists for saying that, but it's what I entirely believe in my heart. You know, you kind of have a gut feeling about things. That's because you're human, and they're trying to rob us and rip all of that away. But this is state-sponsored child abuse. You know,
let me ask you two things. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I think that you're saying that trans folks are not behind this, but they're the ones that are going to get the brunt of it, right? Even though they're not behind. I agree with that.
They are actually, I think there's some bankrolling going on, because it's not an accident that this is happening globally. This is being bankrolled from somewhere, and I don't know what the end game is about. I think it's very dark, like I said, very, very sinister. And I think there's a group of very vulnerable people who are being empowered. You know, I mean, when you get 0.05% of the population or whatever, given that amount of power to change, you know, to back it up with laws, you know, the hate speech laws and all this, that, the other, there's so much power in that tiny, tiny minority over the majority of people, who we're being told that in all of our, however long we've evolved for, we are no longer allowed to regard ourselves as male, female, baby, you know. I
think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's about almost putting people into a state of where they are asexual. Basically, I think that might be part of it. Let me ask you this Melanie, before I take some more calls. Melanie in Newcastle is on the line. Great to have Melanie on talking about this. As a mother, Melanie, if your two grown-up children, if they were 5 and 6 years old today, would you pull them out of school and homeschool them?
Absolutely.
You would?
No question. I would have done it long before now, because this is outrageous, and I think people really need to get a grip. And that's the thing. We need mass action. That's why the teachers, I'm disgusted with teachers. You know, if it was mass action, you know, what are they going to do? Replace hundreds or thousands of teachers. You know, I don't know. It needs to be, something needs to happen. People need to kind of get a grip and realise and join the dots and start act as a large group, and you know,
maybe that time is coming soon, Melanie. Maybe that time is coming soon. I want to thank you for calling today, by the way. Thanks for calling in. It makes the program, it's great. Not at all, Melanie. I'm sure we'll talk again in the future. Thanks for your insights as a mother, and have a great weekend, and look after yourself.
You too, all the best.
Cheers, Melanie. Lovely from Melanie there in Newcastle. I mean, who could argue with that? This is The Richie Allen Show, by the way, broadcasting live in Salford in Greater Manchester. It's coming up for 15 minutes past the hour. phone-in show a little bit later than planned, taking the calls today. My apologies for that. A lot going on in the world as well. Let me give you the details. It's 0161 818 2018. That's the phone number. That's +44 161 818 2018. But you don't have to spend any money to talk to me. There is a Skype account. It is Chat with Richie. That's Chat with Richie. And I'll be delighted to hear from you. Chat with Richie. Right. So I've got about three or four calls there in the queue there. So let me sort them out. Make sure I get them in order. I like to do these things above board. Get it in order. I'll talk to you next, of course, on Sunday morning for Sunday View, 11:30 a.m. UK time. That's Sunday morning, UK time, 11:30, Sunday View, where we look through the newspapers, you and I, the front pages and some of the stories in between as well. Right, going to go to the next call in queue. Next call in queue, it's JB. JB. Great name. Got to be American. Won't be American. We'll get JB on. We'll have a chat. Chat with Richie on Skype. 0161 818 2018. 0161 818 2018. But as I said, chat with Richie. The best way to reach me, because it doesn't cost you anything. Doesn't cost you anything. All right. All right. Now, when I did a phone in last week, that's last week or 2 weeks ago, I was trying to get a hold of Daniel. So I was trying to get a hold of Daniel. But, and I tried to, but we couldn't connect because of sound problems, his end. That's Daniel. I hope we've got those sound issues sorted. I think we might have. Daniel, in Bristol.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. How are you?
Good. That's better than last time.
Good man. Now, I'm going to give a plug for that. I'm going to give Daniel a plug. Daniel presents a podcast called Pay-Per-View, and you can find it on podomatic.com. And Daniel looks at the biggest news stories of the day or of the week and puts them into context alongside other events going on around the world and connects them and theorises about why these things are happening. It's very interesting. Pay-per-view, podomatic.com. There's the plug, Daniel. No charge. Thank you. I'm jesting, by the way. Thanks, mate. Good to have you on.
Yeah.
Well, it's all happening. Language, traitors, surrender, causing people to attack one another, transgender agenda in school, children being told about masturbation when they're 5 or 6. You can pick from any number of subjects, my friend. Where do you want to kick off?
Well, I've kind of got a different, totally kind of separate idea of what I want to talk about.
Go ahead.
You know, you look at these scientific celebrities like Brian Cox,
Grass
Tyson, like all these people. I look at them and I think of one word: gatekeepers.
Now, conscious gatekeepers or unconscious gatekeepers?
A mix.
Go ahead.
Some of them will be knowingly. I've got no doubt that Brian Cox knows that what he says is not true. And not that that goes for everything, but when he's talking about things like astrology and other areas and people like Richard Dawkins, of course, is a celebrity scientist. I think he's the opposite. I don't think he knows. He's against anything alternative. But I think Brian Cox is there as a figure to trash the idea that anything alternative, which is based on an understanding of the nature of reality, which the elite have to keep secret from us.
What about Cox gives you that? I'm not saying for a minute I disagree with you, but just to be the devil's advocate, what about Cox, in terms of the way he conducts himself and what he does, gives you that impression about him? I'm no fan of his either now. Go ahead.
Yeah. I just think the way that he seems to have this kind of contrived personality. He's always got that inane grin. And
He does.
I don't like the... He seems to have a problem when anyone kind of suggests that there might be credibility in anything alternative, as does Richard Dawkins. But I don't see him in the same way in that situation. I think he just has a problem with it because he just doesn't believe it.
Yeah, Dawkins is famous for his atheism, isn't he, Daniel? He's famous for believing that we're here and that's all there is, and we die and then we're gone. That's Dawkins. And he's a bit rude, is Dawkins, and he's a bit obnoxious at times. But I'm going to agree with you. I think Dawkins is committed to what he believes, and he's genuine. Cox, I'm inclined to think you might be onto something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is that there is an awakening in the world now, and part of that awakening is understanding the nature of reality, and they have to have people. See, the reason I call them gatekeepers, it's a bit like the New Age, you know, when you're becoming aware that there's more than the physical dimension to existence. You've got, if you're the elite, to keep people in a cul-de-sac where they think they're making progress, they think they're awakening, but actually they're just being kept in a cul-de-sac and they're not moving forward. And in many ways, the New Age is that when you look at it, because there's a lot of externalizing power in the New Age. And, you know, rather than realizing that we're the real power. And in the same way, when you look at these people like Brian Cox, he's kind of a figure that is, for people who don't understand the nature of reality, people who don't know there's anything other than what we see to existence, then he can appear to be, and these celebrity scientists in general do, the font of all knowledge. When actually there's a heck of a lot of information and knowledge about reality and the deeper levels of the rabbit hole that exists now. But if you're the average Joe or Josephine watching, you're going to think, and this is all part of the elite's manipulation, you're going to think, well, if they don't know the answer, or if they say, we're not sure about this, we're not sure about that, then how the heck will I know?
Yeah, it's a good point. And
that's the mentality. When the information is there, but
when the information is there, just in case people listening overseas don't know who Brian Cox is, Daniel is talking about this guy. He's the BBC's go-to man. He's a young man, a physicist, educated at one of the Ivy League universities. He's presentable. He's a good presenter. He's a very good communicator. Looks good. And he is the BBC's chief. I'm going to use strange language here. He's their chief explainer of the universe. He's their chief, you know, explainer, their chief correspondent. And he does all these documentaries with lovely graphics and lovely music, talking about the Big Bang and where we came from and planets and all of this. Daniel contends that guys like Cox, and he's obviously the main one here in the UK, is used to divert people's attention away from the fact that, well, what we see, smell, taste and touch is but basically a fraction of what there is. That's what Daniel is saying. I think you're onto something.
Well, the irony is that mainstream science says that.
Doesn't it? Of course it does. I mean, you could talk to me about visible light, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to explain visible light? I'm putting you on the spot now.
Okay. According to mainstream science, ironically, of what exists in the universe in terms of mass and matter, is what they call the electromagnetic spectrum. There's a spectrum within what exists. In other words, the light spectrum, because that's what light is, electromagnetic radiation. What we call visible light is a tiny fraction of a fraction, a tiny fraction of 0.005%, which is what the electromagnetic spectrum is said to be. And that's, we can only see visible light. So we can only see a fraction of a fraction of existence. So what on Earth is outside of that?
That's brilliant. You've just described what our field of vision is. It's in a massive room, it's a little speck on the wall. That's our, you know, you could be in Westminster Abbey, and our field of vision, this is scientific, Daniel is telling you the truth here, our field of vision is a little speck of paint on one of the walls. You've got everything else that's around us, but we can't see it.
And, you know, that makes the idea that aliens, and what you ever want to call them, interdimensionals or, you know, ghosts, whatever, can't exist, ridiculous, because are we really saying that the rest of existence is nothing? Of course not. You know, what we're seeing and experiencing now is nothing in comparison. You know, virtually nothing compared to whatever else is outside of visible light.
And you've never heard, I mean, I've never heard, I've seen, I couldn't claim to have watched every single Brian Cox broadcast. I certainly have not. But I've watched them all over the years intermittently. I've seen Attenborough, I've seen Horizon, of course, the BBC Two programme Horizon. I've watched all of those. I don't ever remember anybody talking about visible light and the electromagnetic spectrum. And it's scientifically proven. And yet you'll never hear anybody on the BBC say, guess what? There's a lot of stuff going on around us that we can't see. And by going on around us, we don't mean off planet. We mean interdimensional stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, how much information about Saturn is there in the alternative media that you wouldn't hear on BBC?
Oh, reams of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got this other guy, not to pick on Brian Cox too much, but you got this other guy, Bill Nye, who's pushing human-caused climate change. And I get the same impression from him that he knows that he's pushing an agenda.
He knows it's nonsense, but he's he's paid to say it, basically. Or he's paid to push it. I guess, you know, the information that Piers Corbyn puts out regularly when he gets the opportunity, that the atmosphere is made up of 0.04% of carbon dioxide.
Yeah, CO2. and even some of that is naturally occurring.
Naturally occurring. And man contributes only 4% of that 0.04%, meaning that our contribution to CO2 creation is negligible at best. In other words, it's nothing. It's a blip. It doesn't mean anything. And you have to imagine many of those most ardent promoters of the climate change hoax, they must know that basic fact. They must do.
Well, I don't know if Greta Thunberg knows it.
Well, she won't, God love her, no. And you know, people that are used, I do have sympathy for people that are put out there and used to peddle stuff. We often shoot at or aim at the wrong targets. She's just a puppet.
It's the adults controlling her there.
That
should be the targets, yeah. And that is I saw a video on YouTube today. I think it's called Greta Thunberg Without a Script. And she's asked a question and she just says, I think you should ask the adults.
Right.
And then there's a long pause and she doesn't know what to say. So she's very good with the script.
And of course, none of the reporters that work for the regular, you know, the usual suspects, none of them will ever ask Jean Hinchcliffe, or they'll never ask Greta Thunberg, tell us about this coming catastrophe. Why is it going to happen? Because the kids don't even have the junk science, let alone the truth. And you saw that 5 or 6 months ago when little Lord Poo-Poo Pants, as I called him, one of these Eton-educated arseholes, went on with Adam Bolton on Sky News. And Bolton was having a bad day, so he decided to go after the kid. And the kid basically ran out of the studio, didn't he? He couldn't answer Bolton. He got up and he left. That's right. And they get away with this because nobody challenges the children. Because it's almost unseemly, isn't it, Daniel, to ask one of the children, hey, listen, why do you believe this is happening? Give us some of the science. You're not allowed to say that. They're only children. God love them. But they can tell us that they're coming for us. We're coming for you.
I mean, you've got that with the young people now. You mentioned it just now, transgender, who are the progressives who are pushing the transgender agenda without understanding the consequences for people emotionally after transitioning.
Puberty blocking drugs now.
And even the physical problems people can have.
Well, that's right. Even to a layman or a laywoman, it surely must be striking them as odd that the way is being cleared for pre-adolescent children to take puberty blockers. It's mad. And they don't have any evidence. They admit this, by the way. They admit that they're not quite sure what effects this will have on the kids later on when they get into their 20s. Oh, come on, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, at their level, it's cluelessness, but ultimately it's an agenda, so that's why it's pushed, despite, you know, anything.
Despite the lunacy of it.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, when you say it out loud, I mean, you do it on your show. Before, because I'm going to move on in a sec, Daniel, I've got loads of calls. I'm going to give a plug again. Daniel has got it's not new, it's been around for about a year and a half, maybe a little bit longer. 2 years maybe, Daniel, I reckon. Pay-per-view is a show that Daniel makes, which is good. He was inspired by people that he's read over the years, people like David Icke and Jim Mars and others, and he puts together a show called Pay-Per-View. It's on Podomatic.com. Check it out. And because it's on Podomatic, it will be on, I'm sure it's on Spotify, and it will be on iTunes as well.
It's on all the platforms.
It's on all the platforms. When I hear it, I get a notification through Podomatic that you've done it. So that's where I would hear it. But check it out. So I'm going to give you the final word, mate, before I move on, because there's a mobile number. It keeps ringing over and over and over again. It might be a disaster to answer it, but I will answer it in a minute. I'll give you the final word. Congratulations on pay-per-view. I'm glad you're doing that. Final word on these agendas, mate. Are we ever going to get out of this madness, Daniel? Are we? Or is this going to get worse?
We are, and kind of tying into what I've been talking about, we are when we realise that reality is not what we think it is, and we are not who we think we are. And the awakening that comes from that, where we start to get insight through consciousness, through our own insights, rather than having to be told by some professor or some scientist or, you know, celebrity or otherwise, or some newsreader or teacher or lecturer, what reality is.
Brilliant, you mate. Daniel, that's good, mate. Good to have you. And I know you talk about these things on your podcast. So again, I'll give a plug to the podcast. Paper, that's PAPER. Obviously, View on Podomatic, iTunes, Spotify. Well done, mate. Glad you're still doing it and improving it all the time and putting content in there. And I'm sure we'll talk again real soon, Daniel.
Yeah, hopefully.
Bye. Cheers, mate. Have a brilliant weekend there in Bristol. That's Daniel there, who I've known for quite a while. It's 01618182018, 01618182018. That's the phone number, +44161818218. But you don't have to spend money. You can chat with Richie on Skype. The Skype name is Chat with Richie. Is this Darren, by any chance?
Yeah, this is Darren, yeah.
Darren, right. How you doing? Finally. Nice to have you on. I don't know what happened earlier on. You rang and it came through my phone. It came through another device. But anyway, you're here, mate. I'm glad you're here. You're in Wales.
I ain't in fucking Wales. I'm in Bristol.
Oh, you're in Bristol as well.
I'm not just in Bristol, not Wales.
You're in Bristol.
I'm just in Bristol.
Right. So, no, right? I say as well because I've had two callers from Bristol already. You're the third caller from Bristol.
Fair play. There's
something going on. Listen, mate, you've been trying to get through. I'm glad you did. What would you like to talk about?
Right, I want to tell you, right, that we're not leaving the EU. I've been saying it since 2016, right?
Yeah.
It ain't going to happen. You know it, and I know it, right?
What are we going to do about it?
Well, we're going to do fuck all, aren't we? Because there's no backbone in this fucking society anymore anyway, isn't there, right?
Right. Sadly.
You know that. Do you know what I mean? You're just spraffing the case. I don't blame you. I mean, you're telling people what's what, which is true. You're not lying.
Oh, well, it doesn't mean it's true. It's just my opinion. I mean, what I say is not necessarily true. I've just never believed that it would be allowed. Now, you obviously don't...
It won't be allowed.
Why? Why won't it be allowed?
They've been preparing this for 50 fucking years or whatever it is. You know what I mean? This is the plan. Like, this is what I believe. Right? I mean, I might be wrong, but I don't think I'm wrong because every day I see something and it's just proving me right all along. I mean... I don't actually now. I mean, as it's going along, I less and less trust these politicians. It's just everything's being done to basically stop Brexit. That's all they've ever done. The plan is to stop Brexit. There's no plan to enforce Brexit, as it were, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's no plan to actually make Brexit happen. Every plan has been to sort of, you know, made to stop Brexit. That's all it is. The whole government, in my eyes, you might think, people think I'm paranoid, you know, and crazy, but, you know, the whole British Parliament are all Remainers, the whole lot of them.
I do agree. Where would you have traditionally voted? Would you have voted on the left? Would you have been a Labour Party voter, Lib Dems? Who would you have voted for, Darren, if you don't mind
me
asking?
I'm not left or right. I just want to know what's going on. That's
right.
All. You know what I mean? I mean, I thought we were living in a democracy. I mean, you know, but it seems like we're not. It's like a dictatorship. That's what it seems to me. But because they've got control of everything, we're sort of coerced into sort of thinking that we live in a democracy because everything's done sort of very cleverly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's an illusion.
You know what I mean?
It's a powerful... No, you're right. It's a powerful illusion. It's a very powerful illusion. People still believe... Most people still believe they are in control of their own destiny. And most people still believe that when things are bad, they can make a change next time there's an election. Most people still believe that.
It's sad to say. I mean, to be honest with you, if people knew the truth, I think people bury their head in the sand because it's too depressing. I am depressed. I am a depressed person, believe it or not. Because this is like everything. I mean, they're bombarding us with everything now. Everything they're just chucking it at us. Everything now. Do you know what I mean? Surely, because you've woken up, right?
Listen, you won't get an argument, Darren. You won't get an argument from me. I do know what you mean. It's multi-pronged.
You believed in Trump. I know you did.
Oh, no, I never believed. No, I didn't. No, not in a million years. God, no.
What, not originally?
No, not originally. Not at all. No, go back and listen to the programs. No, I did not. No,
I did. And I you know, I wish I hadn't. And I can see now that he's just another sort of, you know, pawn in the system. Because that's all it is. It's just another person taking the reins of the system that we have. You know, and it's this Boris Johnson thing as well. I mean, everyone thinking, oh, he's doing a good job and all this. No, he's not. You know what I mean? He's there to sort of, he's there basically to basically fail. I cannot see us leaving the EU. You know, it's just, it's not what they want. When I say they, these people who control everything, it's not what they want. I mean, I can't name any names, but it's just a general feeling I get in my bones. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because the European Union was and is a very big part of a future one world government. Of course it is, where you have centralised control rather than individual countries making laws for the benefit of their own citizens. You have lots of countries coming together and giving power to a centralised command set up like we have in Brussels. You saw that, Darren. You know that. That's why you voted to leave the European Union. And sadly, most people don't see that. They don't understand it. They don't have the... Say it for me, Darren. They don't have the information. You get your information from different sources.
I don't think they're interested in the information because they're in the system. The system basically...
So they don't care.
If you abide by the system, you go along with the system. Everything in the system means, like, you know, what you do. I mean, they've got everyone shutting up big time now. You can't say nothing in the workplace. You'll get the sack or whatever. If it word gets out that you've said anything, you're liable to get the sack, and that's your livelihood, right?
This is very serious, by the way. What you're describing there, what you are describing there is incredibly serious, and it's absolutely true. I'm saying to my listeners time and again, if you have a job, you know, if you work in an office, if you work in a school, if you work in a building, you need to be very careful these days what you say on social media, on your Facebook, on your Twitter, on wherever, because you are being judged based on your opinions on issues to do with sexuality, issues to do with politics. You hit the nail on the head there.
You can't have an opinion anymore.
No, you
can't. You cannot have an opinion. People seem to think that we live in a free country. No, we don't. This is a dictatorship because everything is like... You know, it's in everyone's, like, doing stuff. It's all in your subconsciousness. It's all, like, you know, socially engineered into you, you know, through the TV. I haven't watched TV for years right now. I do not watch it because everything you see is, like, I don't know what you call
manipulation.
It, a virtual signal.
Yeah, it is, and it's manipulation.
You know, telling you what's what, yeah. What the world is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'll make my mind up, you know. Let me decide what the world is, you know. On the basis of when I was growing up, I'm like in my 50s. I mean,
well, do you know what, Darren? Do you know what, Darren?
I'm put on the spot here. Do you know what
no,
I mean?
You're not on the spot, mate. You remember a time, and I remember a time.
I fucking do. It pisses me off. It saddens me. It makes me cry. Actually, I mean, all this transgender nonsense. Fucking kids' heads up. I mean, if some cunt wants to go out right and piss about dressing up in women's clothes and all that, let them get on with it. But do not tell kids that this is the norm, right? I reckon this is a depopulation program, right? This, I don't know. I mean, you know, I mean, because all these people aren't going to have kids. They're going to be so fucked up, right?
By the way, Darren, you dropped the C-bomb. You're the first person.
Pardon?
You dropped the C-bomb. You're the first person
the
that I've
that?
Ever interviewed in my life that said the C-word on the radio. The C-word. Yes, that's the one, yeah.
I don't give a fuck. What the fuck do you know, man? I mean, do you know what I mean?
It's no, like, we don't. It's a word that I would rather we didn't use on this programme because it might get me kicked off.
All right, fair enough. Okay, well, you just cut me off if I carry on saying that anyway.
Yeah, but don't say it. I'm not saying I haven't used it before, but it's not the best word to use. But look, anyway, I'm not judging you. I'm just saying that's the taboo word in broadcasting terms
here. I think it's all a depopulation programme. There's a lot going on that people don't realise what's going on. They're not interested.
In terms of the children, what you mean is that by having their heads filled with this stuff, the children become gender neutral or asexual, where ultimately...
Well, they become very confused. They don't know who they are. They're neither male or female anymore. I mean, is that where we're going? Do you know what I mean? I mean, they're doing it with the toys. They're doing it with, well, it's like, what do you call it? Stereotyping, isn't it? It's like, you know, they're trying to eradicate stereotyping so that we're all the same. I mean, it's just gotten ridiculous. Everything's just gotten so ridiculous.
Can I, like I said, can I suggest can I suggest something to you before I take another call?
Take antidepressants, yeah, all right.
Not at all. And you know I wouldn't say that, Darren. Not in a million years.
No, it's all right. It really saddens me because I come from a Christian value. I'm not a Christian, but I was brought up on Christian values, right? Yeah. I was told to basically, you know, a man and a woman, and, you know, you replicate, you know, you have children, et cetera, right? I mean, nowadays, it's like, I don't know what they're up to, but it seems to me it's all pushing towards depopulation. I mean, there's too many of us now, but, I mean, you've got to admit, there's too many. I mean, if we can only get bigger. And the whole sort of letting migrants into the country, I reckon it's to dilute the people of the country. Like, so there's no people of the country.
It's certainly it's one of the things about migration. It's meant to keep us bickering and fighting with one another rather than uniting against the agenda that you've just talked about.
That's right. How can migrants unite? We can't all unite. We're all from all over the place.
I know, but we've got intelligence, haven't we? And if you've got migrants,
people are too busy buying new cars, buying their houses, paying for their houses,
consumerism,
earning their money 8 to 5. Right, that's all they're interested in. Money, money, money. That's all what people are interested in. Money. Nothing else matters. I speak to my missus. My missus, right? She is fucking pissed right off with me, right? Because I just want to know what's going on in this world, right? What makes us tick? Money. That's all it is. Everybody wants money, money, money. I mean, how much money do we need?
Yeah, how much does anybody need? How much
possessions do anybody need? Why aren't we taught how much money we need? What is really important in this life? We're not taught to think. Just like we're told all this crap at school, and then we're meant to just get prepared for work, go to work, and when they don't need us anymore, you know, it's like, I mean, I'm surprised you hear all these stories about how they're going to keep us alive after we're 65. Why? Why would they do that? It doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? We're not contributing. So, I mean, why would they keep us alive till we're 100? It's all nonsense. It doesn't make sense. When you start going into detail, I mean, I don't investigate a lot of this stuff and I don't go into it. I don't need to because I just weigh up the general obvious factors, right? It doesn't make sense. But if you dig deeper, it doesn't make sense. You can see all the evidence.
Let me suggest something to you. I'm going to take another call.
Hey, can't eat depressant. I'm sorry to take your time up, but my call.
You're not taking my time up and I'm not patronising you. You're not. And listen, I wouldn't suggest to anybody that to take antidepressants. What I was going to suggest to you, because I've been where you are now, in terms of absolutely, and I'm sure
people. I'm just saying.
And I'm sure there are people listening to the program who empathise because they've been there. Try not to let it get on top of you. You've got to sometimes disconnect from it, Darren, and just get out and get away from
it. Just annoys me. I go out and I speak to people, and I go in supermarkets and I think.
But then you're not getting away from it, then, are you? But, you know, if you're speaking to people about it, by getting away from it, you need to give yourself a couple of days.
I don't want to get away from it, though, because I just feel I'm burying my head in the sand.
But it's not healthy.
I'm just doing what everyone else is doing.
But you're not, because you know what's going on. So if you decide...
No, but it's hard for me to sort of differentiate from that, if you know what I mean.
Well, if I could do it, anybody can do it. If you can say to yourself 2 days a week, I'm going to go to a country park, I'm going to go to a river, I'm going to go to a canal, I'm going to read a book, and I'm not going to think about this stuff. Because ultimately, all you can do is make the environment around you better. And arrange your environment around you to suit you. Neither you nor me on our own can change what's going on, right? We can't.
You're right.
You've got to do that.
It's hard for me to do it. Another thing, before I go, is that I advise anyone out there not to take a fucking vaccine for a start, because I'll never take a vaccine again, because I do not trust these people in power, these people that tell us what's what. I don't trust them. And I mean, I'm covered. See, the trouble is, when I get going, I sort of like I go on about everything.
That's fine, mate. That's why it's nice to open the phones, because there aren't too many places where we can have these conversations. Sadly, You know,
I mean, it's getting, you know, they're shutting everything down, you know, I mean, bit by bit, you know, I mean, it really saddens me because when I was younger, I mean, these young people, they don't know how bad they got it. You know what I mean? But they think it's everything's hunky-dory, yeah, but it ain't. Yeah, yeah. It's sad, really, but I tell you what, I'm glad you spoke to me. I mean, I wish I had been prepared. You put me on the spot a little bit.
I didn't put you, not at all. Listen, you've articulated your points incredibly well, my friend.
No, you have.
You've not been confused at all. You've been very clear of thought and very articulate. Look after yourself. Stay in touch. Drop me an email if you want to chat anytime. Anytime you're feeling really pissed off, mate, drop me a mail. I'll give you a shout. All right.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I liked your video earlier. Very passionate. I like that.
I don't know.
You even had my missus's attention, right? Which is very rare.
Right.
Because you had a little bit of passion there this morning. I thought, yeah, you're saying things what I feel. You're saying what I feel. Thank you.
No, you're welcome, Darren. And regards to your other half, by the way. Yeah. Your better half. Your better half. We have to say that, don't we? Nice to speak to you, Darren, in Bristol, mate. Stay in touch. If you ever need anything, don't get too bogged down by it, mate, because ultimately, you know, there are things you can do. There are places you can go. There are books you can read. There's music you can listen to. You cannot allow this stuff get on top of you. I often say it when I finish up Sunday View or when I finish up the Thursday programme. I often say it. I say, what do I say? Disconnect from it. Get away from it. Give yourself a break from it. JB in Sweden. Am I going to give JB a call? He tried to ring me back there. This is JB. I know, and I did say to Faisal I'd try and get him on. If I didn't get Faisal on, he wouldn't hold it against me because next time I do a phone in a week on Thursday, I'd get him on first. But I think JB wanted to come on. So he did have a problem with his microphone earlier on. Let's see, can we get JB on? Because he's in Sweden. He's in Sweden, the home of ABBA. But it's a lot more than ABBA. JB in Sweden, welcome to the programme. Are you there?
I'm here.
Ah, nice to hear you, my friend. Welcome to the programme. Which part of Sweden? Where are you in Sweden exactly?
In Oskarström, Sweden.
So where is that? Is that in the Midlands? Is it in the north?
Southern.
Oh, it's in Southern. Lovely. I bet you it's beautiful there, right?
Yes.
Of course it is. Must be an amazing place to be. JB, thanks for coming on, my friend. You've got the floor, as it is, as it were. So what would you like to talk about?
I'm hearing an echo.
Right, you might have me on in the background then, because I'm hearing you loud and clear. So don't worry about me. You talk and tell us what you'd like to talk about.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay. Melanie talked about the diabolical scheme with the transgender stuff. Yes. And it goes way back about the Luciferian. Have you seen the goat-head Lucifer with the one arm up in the sky and one arm down with the children? And very muscular, and has female breasts.
I haven't. That's very interesting. So there is an image of Lucifer with female breasts, but also surrounded by children. I didn't know that. And this is an old image, is it, JB? It's an ancient image.
And the funny thing is,
the line is really bad now, and JB keeps dropping out. I'm really sorry about this, JB.
But they have the old medical genetic symbolism.
Right, JB is dropping out there. I'm really sorry about that. This is really a pain in the backside because he's talking about something really interesting there, and I'd love to get into it. Let me just tell him there. Line dropped out there. Okay. Yeah, you see, this is what happens when you don't have a producer and you don't have an editor. Wow, he was getting into some interesting stuff there. Ah, because I don't know anything about this, but apparently there was an image or an effigy or a mock-up of Lucifer going back. And I think he was saying that it's linked to transgenderism, that Lucifer had, and fair play to JB, he's just come back to me to say that he'll fix the audio for next time, because I want to get him on next time we do a phone-in to talk about this. But apparently this Luciferian thing it's both male and female, and he reckons this is linked to this agenda, and I'd love to get into that with him. Straight to another call on the phone. Caller, welcome to the programme. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi to yourself. Who am I speaking with?
Mark Best.
Mark Best. How you doing, Mark? Welcome.
I'm doing well, thank you, Richie.
Lovely to hear from you, mate. Welcome to the programme. What would you like to say? Go ahead.
I want to talk about the effect that the welfare changes in the last few years have had on people with mental illness and the consequent increase in the number of homeless people. Because I find I often see homeless people being berated around here in the Midlands where I now live. I'm originally from Manchester. But it just outrages me because I know that many people with lifelong difficult mental conditions such as bipolar and schizophrenia were suddenly bereft of their safety net of benefits and told, oh, well, actually, you know, with the right help, we can get you a job, you know, in McDonald's or somewhere. Yeah. And they end up not being able to pay the rent and out on the street. And every time I walk, I'm a lucky one because I've got a wife who's got a decent job, and therefore I can, you know, I've got my own safety net. But a lot of these people don't have that, and I just think a lot of people are so unsympathetic to their plight and regard them as, like, you know, idlers and drug users. Well, I'll tell you, if I was on the street, I'd be using drugs.
Yeah.
And I just think people need to be aware that these benefit changes, the removal of benefits, have caused, you know, incalculable numbers of deaths and so much misery. And I just want people to be more, you know, sympathetic to the plight of the homeless.
Be a bit more human when you meet people, and don't make assumptions about people.
Exactly.
When you meet them, because you have no idea what they've endured, where they've come from. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to look like a nice guy here, because I'm not. But you know, if we can do anything when we're out and about, you know, if you meet somebody who's a bit down on their luck and they're sleeping rough, I mean, the future Mrs. Allen is amazing. She'll never pass anybody without speaking to them. Without asking them who they are, and if she has a couple of quid, give them a couple of quid, or buy them a coffee. And Mark, I'm so glad you brought this up, and I think we need to pay more attention to this on this program than we have done in the past, because I've had some emails from people who want to talk about it. Benefits, we've talked on the program before about benefits being stopped for people, and I understand these are punitive sanctions taken by the government, the Department for Work and Pensions, and these have hit people with chronic mental health problems harder than anybody else. Is that right?
Correct. And also, it must be remembered that it was actually Labour that, I know how you feel about all the political parties, but you know, having been brought up by my dad to revere Labour, I was astounded that things got worse under Blair than they had been under Thatcher. And that's when I started to I didn't realise. When Corbyn came in, I was conned again. But that's the last time. That's the last time. The Labour instituted these reductions in benefits because I personally felt them. I mean, as I said, I'm lucky because I've got a wife who's got a decent job, so I just thought, screw it. I should have really appealed when they suddenly said, oh, well, actually, you're fit to work. And I'm like, well, you know, manic depression doesn't die, and it is often untreatable, as it is in my case, which means that, yeah, you can work a bit sometimes during the year, so I work for myself when I can. But you can't hold down a job. Like, when I was originally diagnosed, I said to my doctor, it doesn't feel right, this, being on the sick. And she said, well, it's not fair on the employer, because you're never going to be well, you know, throughout the year, which you're not. And then suddenly they say, oh, actually, you know, screw that. You're fine, you know, with the right help, you can do this, that, and the other. And so they stop your money. And I at the time, I was so in such a bad place mentally that I didn't pursue it. I should have appealed, really. But I thought, Christ, it's going to you know, it made my condition deteriorate, and I don't need to do it, so I'll just forget it, which I did do.
It's a terrifying thing, Mark. It's a terrifying thing to think that, my God, there are commitments next week, there's a bill that needs paying, there's rent that needs paying, and when you don't have any money, it is absolutely terrifying. And I can say that I've been in that position on many an occasion over the years. There is nothing worse than it. And if you're dealing if you're dealing with illness and ill health, well, I don't even want to imagine that. And we could talk in the last couple of minutes we have. I wish I'd have spoken to you a bit earlier. Maybe we'll get you on again in the near future. But we could talk about how the government introduced this universal credit nonsense, which rolled up benefits. And for our listeners overseas who might not understand this, people who desperately need assistance, not lazy job-shy bastards, but people who need help, used to get various government assistance payments maybe once or twice or three times a month at different times. And for some people, this is important because maybe they're not, you know, maybe not able to manage money. It works out well for them. But they decided to roll all the payments up into one. And then, at the outset of this, they left people waiting 6 weeks, sometimes 8 weeks, sometimes 10 weeks for the payments. And people killed themselves, didn't they, Mark?
Yeah, exactly. The figures aren't available, but it is known that there has been a huge increase in suicides amongst that community of mentally ill people. And it's truly shocking and disgraceful.
It's a disgrace to humanity. And can I ask you this? Yeah. You know where you presumably you do listen to the programme.
I do.
And thanks for listening to it. So you will know that many of the guests believe that this is not bad management, that they're trying to get rid of people. Do you buy into that?
Yeah, I totally think that they just want to waste that section of the population. We're of no use to them. Economically, we are, you know, inviable. So, yeah, we're just, you know, what's the phrase? Useless eaters.
Yeah.
So, they just want us dead. Yeah.
But you're not useless eaters. You're sentient, individual, sovereign human beings. And I'm not saying you're the least of us. You're not the least of us, Mark. But when the least of us needs a bit of help, it demonstrates how healthy a society is by what we do. And when you leave people rot on the streets with mental health problems, and you take money away from them, and you leave them lying there with no dignity, and people walking past them spitting on them, well, it shows that not only is society not fucking healthy, it is a failed state. It's a failed state when you don't look after people.
Totally, yeah, that's it.
I'm glad that you've got good people around you, mate. I really am.
Okay.
And so do I. I wouldn't be I wouldn't be healthy. I wouldn't be in a good place if it wasn't for the people I have around me either. Mark, this is a big issue, mate. Stay in touch with me and let's get into this on the programme in the near future, right?
Yeah, cheers.
And thanks for coming on.
Richie.
No, you're welcome. Where are you calling from, by the way?
I'm in. I live in Staffordshire near Lichfield.
Oh, you're in Staffordshire. Okay, mate. Well, thanks for calling in, Mark. That's a really important point you raised. And, you know, I'm not patronising you. It's a hugely important issue. And I look forward to picking it up again in the future. Thanks,
cheers,
Mark.
Cheers. Great. Thanks a lot.
Have a great weekend, mate. That was Mark there. Mark, I think Mark said it's Mark Best, right? I think he said it's Mark Best. Thanks to all the callers. The ones I didn't get on, you're first up next time. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for the week. Thanks for all the guests that came on during the week. We will speak again on Sunday morning for Sunday View. That's Sunday View at 11 o'clock UK time on the usual channels. Going out with a bit of Al Jarreau today. And I look forward to, I'm looking forward to a couple of nice days off. Disconnect, disconnect, disconnect. Speak real soon, bye.